Ladies and gentlemen, brought to you by Time and Place, live from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are all very welcome to the Sideshow Podcast, live from Salt Lake City. Can we get a round of applause? You're a little bit rowdier than the Irish, it appears. We are St. Patrick's Day weekend. We have a cracking show lined up for you. I should give a gracious thanks to the legend that is Chris Holofield down the back of the room from the I Am Salt Lake podcast. Thank you, Chris. We also have our live band, our in-house show band, Rusted Steel. Ladies and gentlemen, give them a round of applause. Okay, and to my right, we also have our first guest of the show. It is Zenaida Zengo. Did I pronounce that correctly, Zenaida?
Zenaida.
Zenaida. Okay, that's my Irish twang, and I won't even try to pronounce that correctly again. Zenaida, you were in the story. You were in Time and Place earlier on today, and you were doing what some might perceive as something that is quite easy to do, which is the growing of, in this case, air plants. But I kind of looked at it and went, okay, they don't require moisture. They don't require soil as such.
They do require moisture. They don't require soil.
Right. Take two and we won't edit that out. They don't require soil. They do require, says he who studied horticulture. But you wrote a book on this.
Correct.
So it's now becoming in my head, therefore, a little bit more difficult than I maybe thought at first. How easy is it to grow air plants?
It's not difficult at all, and it's not that it's necessarily easier. It's just different. They don't take water in through their roots, and so you don't plant them in soil and you don't water their roots. You water their leaves. They just drink water through their leaves, so they photosynthesize the same as other plants, but their water intake is different.
So let's say for example, Chris. Chris, have you ever grown air plants?
I haven't actually.
No.
No.
Have you got houseplants?
A couple.
What are they?
I actually don't even know. They're my fiancés.
Okay. All right. So Chris is now our new non-horticulturist. If Chris is to go out in the morning and buy a couple of air plants, how does this all work? What's he do? What's the basics?
The basics are that they like bright light. So you don't want to just throw them in a dark corner, near a window or outside when it's above frost temperatures and like a bright shade or early morning sun. I like to say, they like sun, but it's safest when it's the times when it's least harsh, like not between noon and three. So east facing morning sun, gentle afternoon sun rays. They like brightness. They like some sun. You just don't want to throw them in a dark corner and you don't want to throw them in blazing hot sun in the middle of summer. Something in between.
Feel like I should be taking notes here, you know?
it's in podcast, Chris. You can listen back to it. It's all good.
Very true.
It's very easy to do.
Very true.
Zenaida, let's go a little bit of a different way. Were you always into plants? I mean, sideshow bingo for me is I used to grow plants under my bed when I was five. I did my first garden age. This isn't
on
a joke.
On your bed when you were five?
Under
years
my
old.
Bed. Yeah.
Under your bed.
Yeah. Do you see? The logic is you can get up in the middle of the night and see if they've grown when you're 5 years of age. That's where my head would have been. And I literally did do that. Get out in the middle of the night, wake up my brothers with a torch under the bed, see if they've grown. Of course they hadn't.
That's cute.
I'm a little bit older now, and apparently with the horticulture education, it's not so cute. I mean, I look back on little me, Dan, and I, hold on, I'm not being interviewed. You are. Let's go to
Tell
you.
Tell us about your childhood.
If we get into
were you a happy child?
If we get into, I'm still a very... The tables are being turned on me. Zenaida is now the new host of the Sod Show. She's going to team up with
Thank
Chris.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you very much. Let's go to you. Did you do that as a kid? Did you do all of those things? Where did this all start? And if you don't mind me asking, then where did it evolve into, I guess, something that is a little bit more of a...
I would say my dad was he really encouraged my love of not necessarily plants specifically, but nature in general. My parents split when I was about 1 year old, but they had joint custody, and so they lived a mile apart, and so I grew up with both parents right there. But at my dad's house, he loved animals and my mom didn't. So we had, I think he had that complex of, I want to be the best daddy in the world. So he gave us every animal we wanted, tons of kittens and puppies and bunnies and ducks. And, you know, we had a big garden, flower garden, vegetable garden, and he would take us out in it and play with snakes. We'd find snakes and he'd put them in my hands. And so I think from being a young girl, I remember dad's house meant I got to play with animals in the dirt, with plants, and I always thought that was the best time ever. So I just grew up loving animals, always having animals, always raising animals, and always being in the garden. And so I went to college in a nature town and had a lot of dogs, had a lot of vegetables, and had a very kind of traditional type of gardening experience at, you know, when I was 19, you know, kind of doing that early on. And then when I graduated college, I moved to San Francisco and lost, you know, having a yard space and all that.
Did you study horticulture?
I did not. I studied painting and drawing, but I worked when my college jobs were working with plants. I loved it so much that I always read books. My dad, you know, gave me Sunset Western Garden book, was my very first garden book. He's like, honey, read this front to back and you'll figure out what to do. And I did. And I kept reading more and more books and just trying things. Of course, every true gardener learns by real failures, you know, by killing plants. That's how every gardener learns more than anything, is not horticulture school, is by killing plants.
I should note on Zenaida's note of the snakes, we would have a problem with sharing the same experiences in Ireland. The fable of, not fable, but the St. Patrick's Day weekend in mind, and the fact that they were banished. Let's go a little bit of a step. Let's go a little bit of a step forward, though. How do you become what I would consider an expert in air plants? And if you don't mind me asking, in that same breath, when people ask me what I do, I get to say, well, I make gardens and I do this podcast thing, or essentially I talk a lot, you know, and you turn around and say, well, I do air plants. Is that a, you know, if you were in a pub, man, and I was in a pub and I was chatting you up, like I'd be listening to you. I'd never get to know anything about you. I'd be stuck on the air plants thing the whole way through.
Well, there's a lot in that. That one question.
There is.
So I guess, yeah, I kind of ended on the part of that story. I moved to San Francisco. I lost a yard and still, of course, was obsessed with growing plants. So I'd grow whatever plants I could. I started working for a store called Paxton Gate in the Mission that specializes in bromeliads and orchids and other epiphytes, which tillandsias are, which are plants that don't grow in soil. And so I was growing air plants or tillandsias because you could suspend them in a Victorian windowsill in San Francisco and have 300 plants in a very tiny space, which I did for 12 years.
But you then went to the book thing. When somebody back home or at least in Ireland turns around and says, like, I'm publishing a book. It's almost like the way I see it anyway, it's almost like a rite of passage. You've earned a stripe on your arm. And were you did you go to the publisher?
No, it's kind of funny. It just kind of fell in my lap. I wasn't trying to write a book at all. I always thought somebody ought to write a book on that. You know, there is a great one. Paul T. Isley wrote Tillandsia, and a second version of it's been put out. But it's more of a collector's book. It's great for horticulturalists. I'd say for the novice, it's not ideal. It's expensive. And it's a lot of detailed information, which is great for us that work in the trade and great for the nerdy novice. But for your average person who just wants to learn and get inspired to work with plants, it wasn't quite, didn't fill that niche. After I left Paxton Gate, I went to work for a pretty wonderful place called Flora Grove Gardens. It's a very popular and wonderful nursery because they do so much with design and everybody there is beyond knowledgeable in plants. I mean, I call them every couple days to like ask them questions about soil and stuff. I mean, they've become my plant family. But I went there and I had a lot of Tillandsia knowledge because I had worked at Paxton Gate, which specialized in Tillandsia. The owner there actually initially taught me a lot of what I know. His name is Sean Quigley. And when I went to Flora Grub, I ended up knowing more about Tillandsias than anyone else there did. Everyone there is phenomenal in every subject in horticulture, but there was a little bit of a gap in the Tillandsia knowledge, and I just ended up spearheading that department. So Timber Press actually came to Flora Grub wanting to put out this book that I was saying had a niche that needed to be filled. They were looking for our nursery to put out the book, and they were like, well, obviously, Zenaida is our person.
Yeah, you were. No, but I had a chat with, funnily enough, Bessie from Timber Press and the UK office were on to me, and they had noted you to me. So when I found out that you were going to be doing a workshop in Time and Place, I was a little bit like, I get to meet the girl who wrote the book. I get to meet her. Normally when I do these interviews, and they're obviously to the States, you get to do them, but they're, you know, I'm at home in Ireland and you're way out there. It's a real honor. It's a real pleasure. Chris, we have some books for sale, don't we? We have some of our books for sale.
We do. They are, I believe they're right back here, aren't they?
Okay. And you're going to be around to sign a few of them?
I'm here. Yeah.
So if you want to get your hands on it, so for the people who do turn around and say, actually, I feel pretty inspired, I'm not very good at growing a whole lot of things, I am Chris Hollifield's best mate or roommate or good lady.
Yeah.
Chris has a child on the way, I should add, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
A little baby girl.
You're going to have to try and impress her, Chris. I've got a daughter. Will. You know what I mean? Some air plants will go down fairly
kids
well.
Kids do love them because kids love to spray water. If you know any child, they want to spray water on things, and you can't spray a Tillandsia too much. So you just give the kid a squirt gun or a spray bottle, give them an air plant, let them spray like crazy.
I got to ask you a question, because Tillandsia to me is the same as the first time I figured out the chemical equation for photosynthesis. For those of you who don't know, it's the process by which plants make their own food from the sunlight, right? So you figure out the chemical equation, you're chatting up a girl in a bar and you say to her, C6H12O6 plus 6O2, sunlight and chlorophyll, I'm your man. Doesn't always work. In fact, all of the times have failed miserably. But you say Tillandsia, and in my head, I've got that bell going off, which is, she's got a photosynthesis one. What is Tillandsia? Is that the word? Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, what do you mean? Tillandsia is the genus. It's...
Okay, and the genus is... You got to break this down for me like I'm a 2-year-old.
I'm not sure I follow the question.
Okay, pretend I'm okay. 4 years of age, and explain to me what Tillandsia means.
What Tillandsia means?
Or is?
Tillandsia is the official botanical name for a plant that is in the bromeliad family. It's a small little epiphyte, which is a plant that grows with no soil, and it grows up in the trees. It attaches itself to a host plant, like a tree, a fence. It doesn't have to be a tree, a cactus. So they grow in tropical rainforests. They grow in the desert. They grow on other plants, basically.
So I was in Madeira. I'm walking down the coast road, and they've got this big, huge ball, and it's got wire around it. And for all intents and purposes, it's like a half a football size, uh-huh. And it's tied up to a piece of timber wood, and essentially that's what it was. And it was taking in the salt air from the sea, doing it that way to keep it moist. That is like a roadside park variation of what you're talking about. But when we get to, I got her, yeah?
Yeah, sounds very much like a Tillandsia.
Okay, I'm the man. I'm learning stuff all
sounds
the time.
Sounds like a Tillandsia clump, several. They pup, or they kind of self-propagate by having little offsets or babies. And they can become a spherical, very large clump.
Okay.
So that's what you saw.
Thanks very much. Now I know what I was looking at. In the nicest way of saying, to what I saw in Time and Place, and when you were doing your workshop earlier on, they were obviously a little bit smaller. They were like smaller than the size of my fist. Some of them looked like, is it the Medusa? What's that one?
There is Tillandsia caput medusa, yes.
Okay, so
Medusa.
The name kind of caught my ear. It sounded like a Hendrix album or something along those lines.
Well, it is called Medusa because of her hair. It does get curly. So the more water it's deprived of, the leaves will shrink up and get tighter and coil up. And then the more you water them, they actually straighten out. And
okay. So much does one cost in Time and Place? Give me an example.
Those are usually on the higher end of Tillandsias. they're pretty slow growing in general. So I think a lot of times people complain about their price when they go into a store, but they take several years to, you know, grow at all visible to the eye. And so you're paying for somebody, greenhouse or grower, whoever, several years of care. So when you think about that little plant or that little clump of plants that you're buying, somebody cared for it for quite a long time. So that's generally why they cost a lot. But the Kappa Medusas usually are anywhere between 12 and 25, I guess. Depends on how big it is.
25 quid? Okay, so I can afford one of them. That's all right. I'll probably only get it back through the airport, and you might have to post it to me, but we'll figure it out. But to the other side of it then, actually, can we take a little bit of a break? Can we have 2 minutes of in-house music with our in-house band? Is that possible? Give a round of applause. That was absolutely brilliant, lads. Well done. Enjoyed that. On the eve of St. Patrick's Day, and we get a little bit of a taste of home, all brought to you by the snakes. Not a problem. Chris, that's an in-house Irish joke. Could we have a couple of people that we need to thank, sponsors and that?
Can we? Yeah, we got some sponsors to thank for this. First of all, the Mandate Press, where we're recording tonight. KRCL, Bare Bones Living, King's English, Hibernian Society.
That's the Irish Hibernian. Lads. You don't upset the Irish lads.
Sorry about that.
That's
Wasatch Community Garden.
Wasatch Community Gardens. I was there today, and they will be coming up. For those of you listening in the future, thank you, Chris, by the way. For those of you listening, we will have a fantastic interview coming up with Mary Bett from Wasatch Community Gardens in just a little bit. Just to let you know, we also have real shamrock. Trifolium jubium, as it is correctly known, for those of you not aware, tree, folium, foliage, jubium, dubious. Don't entirely know what it is, but we have it. We have it on sale, and it is here today, and I'm delighted, and the lads have sent it from back home. And also to my good friends, Two Spots Coffee, who, you wouldn't believe it if I told you, they sent across more kgs of coffee than I could actually intravenously take into my body within the 7 days that I am here for, all because they heard and they wanted a little bit of home here for me. And also we have a big thanks to the gentlemen and ladies who are behind the scenes of Blarney Castle, who, when they were taken apart to do some restoration works, I believe I'm the first person to be gifted 6 pieces of the stone, and we will have one to present to the president of the Hibernian Society, the Irish in Utah, who are, I should add, one of our sponsors. The first one was obviously given to Melinda Miservi, owner of Time and Place and brains behind why we are all here today, essentially. Let's get on with the rest of the show. Zenaida, what's a weekend for you, number one, where you're not gardening? And number two, if I walk into your house, are you like the mechanic has the worst cars kind of thing? Do your house plants look a little bit, or do you have them all arranged? How does that bit work for you?
Ideal weekend for me when I'm not gardening is probably rock climbing and camping. I like to sleep outside a lot, so I go camping probably a couple times a month.
I know I've done wild camping in Ireland before, which is a little bit different. For those from Ireland, have you got a, I mean, obviously the weather is glorious today. When you say camping out, sleeping outside, pardon me, and I'm not, you know, trying to take the mick out of you to put an Irish spin on the best way to say it or the only way I know how, but do you literally go out the back garden and just sleep at the back door?
It's possible, sure. That's probably a little more atypical, but I recently moved to Moab, Utah. Before that, I was living in San Francisco, so I would go to Yosemite or Tahoe a lot on the weekends to go rock climbing with friends or go mountain biking or road biking in the North Bay and up the coast and kind of overnight in North Bay towns. So I try to not be inside as much as possible. And then now that I've been in Moab, I camp pretty close to my house because there's camping all over the Colorado River, Monument Valley and Bear's Ears. And I've been exploring a lot of the Southwest, and I either sleep in a tent or sleep in my car, or sleep in a sleeping bag on the ground, or I try to not be inside.
You do know if you told me you drink Guinness that, you know, the chance of me and you actually running away into the sunset together are getting closer and closer as the longer this interview goes on. You do know that. Do you drink Guinness?
I drink beer.
My heart can't cope.
I prefer ale. I prefer some, you know.
I'll get back to you on it. I'll have to organize a dairy first. We'll figure out a couple of goats so we leave the snakes out of that one. We've got some other events coming up, Chris, don't we, over the next couple of days at Time and Place in Salt Lake City?
We do. On Saturday, it looks like at 10 a.m., you can come march in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. And then at 1:30, moss and mushroom wreaths with Genevieve Hubbard of Beehive Floral. And then at 3:30 is tropical terrariums.
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 Yeah, it's a difficult one.
Jody, I'm not sure how to pronounce her middle name there, Smith. And then 8 to 10 looks like another live sod show.
Oh, that's on Saturday. Okay,
this so for Saturday, yeah.
What day are we? Because officially St. Patrick's Day Parade is the Friday, but
that's Saturday.
St. Patrick's Day, I'm the Irish guy. St. Patrick's Day is the 17th of March. The parade is on the 18th.
Correct, yeah.
So for those of you in the audience, can I get a quick show of hands? Who's coming in the parade with us? You're okay, we've got three. You're not, you better be. Hold on, sorry, for those of you listening at home, okay, so we're in podcast, so you can't hear the other voice. There's a guy came into the shop earlier on this morning, into Time and Place, and there was a bowl of, just like you right there, a bowl of Shamrock was made and put together. And I think you were telling me your good lady is from Belfast, up around Belfast, isn't it? Yes, lovely, beautiful part of home. There we go. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming. We'll see you in the parade. Let's get back to our marriage proposal. I'm not joking. We are halfway there.
Do you have an all season tent? Because I only have a three season.
Well, I live in Ireland. Like, my all season tent is far better than your all season tent based on the sunburn. Well, the only thing you need
that
to
would
know.
Be a make or break the deal.
Well, I've got an Irishman's tan, which means it goes no higher than the sleeve of my t-shirt. And then it just goes to bare white. So that's the only thing you'd have to put up with. Are you okay with that?
I don't know. I'm big into wardrobe. I may have to work on it for you a little bit.
Okay, but. I can fake tan. I don't mind. You know, I'm going to grow a beard like Chris Hollifield. I'm joking. Okay, we're halfway there. Let's get back to the book. How long does it take? For a guy who's never written a book before, how long does it take to write a book on air plants? How much work does it take to put in? I mean, to your credit in that book.
Work. I mean, just say bye to friends for a little while. Just
say that to me again, sorry.
When you're working full time and writing a book on the side, you don't get to do a lot of social activities for close to a year.
Close to a year. And who did the photography for you? Because to your credit, that is absolutely amazing work.
Caitlin Atkinson. Yes, she's wonderful. Not just a wonderful photographer, but a hilarious and fun individual.
And photographers who are fun and hilarious, we have our very own Dan Nick to the right-hand side. He is the most fun and hilarious photographer I have ever met in my life, and an absolute gentleman, except for her friend. Well, I've never met her friend, Nick. I've only ever met you. We've got a... Listen, this is an interesting show, and we're part number one of it. How long has the book been on the go? Because when I spoke to Timber Press and I was talking to them, they turned around and they said to me, look, it's been out a little bit, but, you know, you're going to do the interview and that's all right. So has it been out a bit? What's been the reaction to it like?
It's been out for a few years. Yeah, the reaction's been great.
Are you going to do a number two? Do you get to do that with something like that?
I am working on a second book. It's a little... in early stages. It has nothing to do with Tillandsias, but yes.
Can you tell us what it's going to be about?
Well, it will be on drought-tolerant plants, and it will be, you know, part of it at least will deal with extreme climate, as I'm discovering, having moved from the Bay Area to Moab, Utah. Things are a little different, and the weather is intense. And so my struggles of trying to grow the kinds of plants that I really like, which are a lot of columnar cactus and agaves and things, has been very challenging. So it will be a lot about my challenges. It will feature some artists, and a lot of what I realized from writing the Tillandsia book was that most of my readers were coming from, not from the Bay Area, they were coming from all parts of the world. And because I had written the book from kind of a small regional aspect, I wanted it to encompass a larger climate.
For those who want to get in touch with you, Zenaida, if they want to send you a note, or do you do the Facebook, the Twitter thing? Have you got a website?
I'm on Facebook, but I might take about 6 months to get back to you. You could email me at I have a website. It's zsango.com. That's my first initial and last name, zsango.com. And there you can see my contact, which is zsangodesign@gmail.com. I think also zenaidasango@gmail.com also works.
Okay, so if you're on the road, if you're walking, if you're listening to this in the future, don't worry about any of that. Just at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow and sodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, live from Demande Press, with thanks to you, everybody who's turned up, all the sponsors mentioned earlier on, and brought to you by Time and Place. This has been the Sodshow Live. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have our house band play us out. Thank you very much.
That's it. We're good.
Thanks, Peter.
Broken bottles in the hotel lobby. Seems to me like I'm just scared of never feeling it again. But I know it's crazy to believe in silly things, but it's not that easy.